Now I think we have Donny Tarrant on the line. And of course, he's of the Spanish and a great country and western fan, I do believe. And of course, he does a whole lot of other bits and pieces as well. And you name it, he does it. Donny, are you with us?
I surely am, Austin. Good afternoon. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. I was learning what we were doing for a couple of programmes and that we'll be continuing them. It's about in my father and mother's time, or grandfather and grandmother's time. And what
That would be the case. That would be the situation in my case, Austin. I can't remember back as far as other people.
Excuse me. We all had good parents and grandparents, and what influence they had on the future of their offspring. You know, and quite a lot of them had very, very good influences regarding them and their offsprings and where they went and what school they went to, and made sure they did the right thing. And I presume it's the same in your case.
It would have been us, a lot of the listeners, obviously, that we have there, would have been Dublin originally as such, you know, but then again, a lot of them would have been maybe from country parents. I would have come to Dublin from the country like myself. So it was slightly different, but I don't think that the difference between country and Dublin was as stark in those days as it is today, because I think that, you know, just the word you used there, the values and the way they looked at life, was pretty much the same insofar as that it wasn't complicated and it was pretty simple. And I heard you making reference to it there like that. You know, we're talking in the vast, majority of cases, Austin, about a generation who didn't have the benefit of the education that we had. And they were very, very, adamant that our generation, well, my generation anyway, and I presume the one before me as well would have been the same, that they got as good an education as was available to them at the time and that they progressed through life. But, you know, they had very simple values about that. And, I mean, growing up in the country, you sort of learned, I suppose, the real basics that I won't say they were ground into you, but you grew up in them and you kind of carried them through your life about, you know, the thing about, you know, if you couldn't do somebody a good turn, don't do them a bad one. You know, be fair to people, be helpful to people. And as well as that, then, you know, another thing now, I can only speak about my own household, but it was something that was very much sort of drilled in when we were young, is that if you couldn't afford something, you didn't buy it. I mean, there was three great, pillars is the word I would use, like the local Garda sergeant, the church, and we lump banks and politicians and all that together. Like, they didn't tell lies and they were beyond reproach now, as we have seen since Austin, that hasn't been through. But you lived by those sort of things. And the other thing was, higher purchase was like a mortal sin. You didn't do it, you know. So you kind of went forward with those type of things. And yes, you saw things and yes, you'd like to have them. But you kind of had this thing of you didn't borrow unless you absolutely had to. With the result like that, you were looking at whole generations there who really the only thing they ever borrowed for was to buy their house. And I mean, you will hear still to this day people that will tell you when they bought the house that their first furniture was beer crates or orange crates as chairs, that they saved up then to buy the stuff afterwards.
Yeah, well, I know people that were like that. They use orange boxes that they had for seats and tables. But, of course, they survived. Now, the values that parents, and particularly grandparents, instilled in people. Now, they were coming out of a very, very bleak time. We're talking about bleak times now, but they were coming out of a very, very bleak time as such. And, they were struggling to make ends meet, quite a lot of them. But then you had grandparents who could do a huge amount with very little, and they pass those skills on to their children as such, you know. And basic foods could be made into massive dishes, and they all had recipe books and all that type of thing. There was no fast food or junk food or whatever. If you hadn't got it or grow, if you couldn't buy it or couldn't grow it, you were back to porridge or something like that, you know. And these instilled values in people with respect to what they had and how to hold on to it.
Well, they did, Austin, but I mean, the other side as well, and it's a funny thing that we're doing this today, and I mean, like, so Johnny rang me this morning and said, would I chat to you today? And I said, yeah, no problem. But it's a funny thing that we're doing this, because I was only talking about somebody at the weekend, and the phrase I used to describe them was, they knew how to stretch a pound. And that's, you're talking about a generation there who really knew how to stretch a pound, because they wouldn't see too many pounds. Let's be honest about it, Austin, you know. And
might be half crowns.
You're talking about it. Yeah, well, you're going back a bit before my time, but yeah, I understand what you mean by that. And I mean, I saw it at home myself when I was very young, like that it just wasn't there. But you always had heat, you always had the basics, you always had food in your stomach, you had heat, and you had warm clothes, you had the basics, you know what I mean? And I think that maybe through generations that... I often look around and I look down. I have four grandkids myself now at this stage. Now the eldest is seven. But you just wonder, like, as each generation comes along to replace the one going before it, you're wondering, like, that we have so much, and there is so much out there now, that, I mean, you wonder, have they lost sight of what the actual things in life that are important are, if that makes any sense to you. And I can't help but, I won't say worry, but I wonder, is there generations like that have lost, you know, what the real important things are? I mean, you're talking about grandparents. Well, I'm going back even to me own parents' younger days, and I suppose my grandparents. Now, I barely remember my grandparents. But I do often wonder if you could go back in time and talk to them in their own time and explain to them about a mobile phone or a car that had parked itself, they would think, and quite rightly, that you had lost the run of yourself, that you are totally gone in the head.
And to be getting doctors to make sure that you were, you could end up in the loony bin. And that happened quite a lot.
And I mean, you know... Like, when you think about it, we have come so far materially, let's say, in such a short space of time. But I wonder, you know, have we actually improved ourselves as such? Like, I still see it now when I go down home, like, there is that great, and it's a buzzword now, but it was always there, community spirit is there, where everybody helps everybody else, and, you know, and sort of nobody is left behind. But even in the country, and I mean, where I come from is extremely rural and that, but even there, you see slight changes, and you see things coming in, and you say, ooh, that wouldn't have happened in my time, you know, but is it progress or isn't it, Austin? And I suppose that is the, you know, while I know what the kernel of the piece is, like, where you're thinking back to your parents' and grandparents' times, you know, you could stack up beside that, are things better or they're worse? Yes, we have more electronic devices. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, the amount of people you see walking around now with a set of headphones in and a mobile phone in their hand and walking out in front of cars and trams and et cetera, et cetera. And I just think that we're heading for a generation that will not know how to hold an actual intellectual conversation.
Yeah, well, of course, I was just mentioning that earlier, that there'll be a new language now with texting and such, you know, and of course everything is instantaneous. Now, you can get into out of Mongolia in a flash, and they could send a photograph.
It is instantaneous, Austin, but it and that's the word you use, and that's a very apt word, actually, maybe for what we're talking about. It's, as you say, it's instantaneous. I mean, we can watch in real time Mr. Trump, or that's if you want to be so kind to describe him as Mr. Trump, talking live from the White House. But also, Austin, if you want any any item in life, it's there instantaneously for you. You can go and get it, and it's there in front of you, and you have it physically in your hand. You wonder, is that a good or a bad thing? I'm not going to come down on one side or the other. You know, I don't really mind if we have all these things. Once, as I said, that we can keep the basics of what, you know, human interaction should be like. I mean, I can go back to when I was small in our house at home. Anyone from the country would be familiar with the term. It was a roving house where at 7 or 8 and 9 o'clock at night in the winter time, the neighbours would come in and they'd all be talking. And I mean, you'd be listening to topics being discussed there. And again, I go back to a generation who wouldn't have had the best of schooling as such. And they would be dissecting the news of the day from the paper, and it would be who said what about which. And I mean, I heard political discussions at the fireside growing up, and you would wonder in today's era of technology and of news on the go every 5 minutes, I don't know if there are that many people. I mean, there are people today making a good living out of being political pundits. You're talking about a generation that were all political pundits, and they had a real interest in politics as well. And they were well able to decipher who was for real and who was bluffing and who did what. And, you know, it was a... I think that they were a generation that, you know, you'd wonder if they had the chances that we had, what kind of a country we would have today.
Yeah, I mean, of course, the printed board, you know, was the thing. And, of course, there could be all sorts of elaborations with regard to what was said, etc., etc., and all sorts of different variances as such. But that comes down to values. And values, we think, the values that your grandparents and your parents had, are sort of being, you know, they're not being washed away as such, but their influence isn't as good. And the attention span of people now with all these gizmos, and the world's worst of them, by the way, all these gizmos, and the attention span is very, very short with regard to it. And like with Twitter, you were talking about Mr. Trump, Twitter, and he sitting up in bed twittering everybody in sight. But that happens. People get that much information, they just ignore it.
You're probably right, Austin, and I think, you know, you used a phrase there, and it's very apt to what you're saying, that there is so much information coming at people now that it's actually washing over them. They're not actually taking it in, because there's so much coming at you now you couldn't take it in, because you'd need to be actually in the job, the likes of what we're doing, that you can actually sit down and disseminate it and work your way through it. The ordinary person on the street in a normal 9-to-5, Monday to Friday job doesn't have the time to do that, you know, and as such, there's nearly so much of it coming at them now that they probably ignore 3/4 of it and say, oh, no. And again, like, I just think that you were talking about, now, obviously, Austin, we're talking about a much simpler time and a time when the I never heard the word pressure or stress in those days. Now, obviously, there were people who had mental issues, etc., and they were referred to differently and dealt with in horrible ways. But people were working hard, but they weren't under stress, because that was the way it was. And you kind of, it followed on from generation to generation as such. And, you know, they didn't stress themselves out. They came home and at the end of their day's work, and they had their wash, and they had a dinner, and in my father's case, Lord rest him, when he had all that done, the next thing he did was he filled his pipe and he sat off and he had a smoke. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know...
That's called downtime.
It's just the way it was. It was a simpler time.
Now, the influence, and now we get to the two big issues with regard to the past. The church. Now, people were put up on pedestals. And you were talking about the schoolmaster and the bank manager.
Bank manager.
Yeah. And these people were renowned. And but they probably all knew everyone. They'd know all the clients, etc., etc. But that seems to have totally and utterly changed in maybe in half a century. And of course,
I would say, Austin, that it has changed in less than half a century. Mm-hmm. I would say that the last 20 years, I'll stretch it, maybe 25 years, particularly with the church, has seen a change that nobody anywhere could have predicted. And I mean, you're dead right in what you said there, Austin. The power they held and the power they wielded was unbelievable. And, you know, the analogy earlier on of going back to your grandparents and telling them about today. If you sit down with a 22 or a 23-year-old today and tell them about the power that the church had 50 years ago, they think you're mad, because they just can't comprehend it. And likewise, the schoolmaster and the bank manager. I mean, the power that they wielded was phenomenal. And I suppose if it goes to prove anything, it does prove that there is no particular organ, I think is the right word to use, mm-hmm. of society that should hold so much power. That is one thing that has been proven. Now, what you do with it, how you disseminate it out, that's for somebody that's getting paid a lot more than us. But, I mean, we have seen in the last, I'd say, 25 years, the change in the church, and, you know, when all was, to use your phrase, washed out what was actually going on. In the last 10 years, we've seen the same with the banks. And in the last 5-6 years, we've seen the same with our police force or our Garda force, you know, and not at the bottom, but at the top. And again, it's the amount of power they held. And, I mean, bank managers, the power they had in the country, and I presume it was the same in the city, they had the power to make or break people.
Did. And like the local bank manager, that we say in a small town, or even a medium-sized town, if farmers came in looking for a loan to get whatever, you know, and usually with the money wasn't all that, you wouldn't be looking for $500,000 or something at that time. And we'd have to have all sorts of certainties, etc., etc., and all sorts of guarantees before they got the money. And the bank manager, if he didn't like you, that could be a different story. But in quite recent years, now we go back 10 years ago, people could ring up and get $1 million over the phone. And I know people that did it. And they were
correct.
And they were going back and forward. And money was so available, because it was being all borrowed from Germany at a much lower rate. And the bubble, burst eventually. And I think we're heading straight back into the same bubble again.
We are in exactly the same thing again, because, I mean, when you look at the figures that were released there recently in relation to how property is going up in price again, it's frightening. And it's not that we're in danger of repeating the mistakes of the past, often. We are, as we speak, repeating them. I mean, you're talking there about bank managers giving you $1 million over the phone, and it's a story that I often quote, because it's based in fact, because I know the people that were involved, and it happened at home not that terribly long ago, within the last 10 years, where a young fella was getting married, and his father gave him the site of a house, which is not uncommon in the country, often, as you know yourself.
And that was at the moment.
Everyone was happening at the moment.
About giving a piece of land for a house. Yes, Tony, I'm confusing you.
Everyone in the family were either plasterers, carpenters, plumbers, electricians. Yeah. He had all the trades lined up, and he had money saved. So with the result that he needed, I think, something in the region of 80,000 or 85,000 euro. And he went into his local bank, where he had an account since he was 14 years of age. The manager sent it off to, which he no longer can make decisions on these things now, sent it off to some computer whiz kid in Dublin, who sent it back, and based on the figures, now this is the bit, Austin, that you will enjoy. We regret to inform you, because I saw the letter myself, we regret to inform you that we were unable to acquiesce to your requisition of a loan for 85,000. However, should you wish to take out a mortgage of 250,000, we can assure you that it would be looked upon favourably.
Oh, yeah, well, you're underborrowed.
And the man says, go make sense of that.
Yeah, well, I know that happened in other cases. Well, it was about 10 years ago. People went to the bank and they needed a small amount of money, you know. And they were asked what size was the house they were living in, and maybe your man said 4 bedrooms. Oh, that's an extra bedroom. See, there's only 3 of us living in the house. That's an extra bedroom you can lend out, hire out for X amount of money for a year, you know? And I think they were talking about something like 14,000. And but you're underborrowed, you need this extra, you know. And of course, the man that was giving the money out was getting the bonus for that. So it was up to them to give it.
Yeah, he was on commission.
Yeah, up to them to get as much money out as possible, and not how much money that was coming in, they were getting the bonus on.
But you see, the other side of it as well, Austin, I suppose, and it is a very reasonable argument to make, that, for want of a better expression, in times past, when you went into the bank, you know, you were nearly guaranteed that you were going to be dealing with the same people all the time, and they knew you, and you built up a relationship with them. Nowadays, and looking down the road into the future, and indeed the not-too-distant future, I think that if, to get a human interaction when you go into a bank will be next 9 years impossible. As far as I know, well, it's not as far as I know, I know it for a fact, that if you want to speak to somebody in the bank now, you have to make an appointment.
Yes, and
you know, so we're going to be dealing more and more and more with machines. And again, you know, going back to what we were actually talking about, if you go back to your parents' or grandparents' time and explain this to them, this is how a bank would work, see how far you get with that conversation.
You're mad. Now, of course, you go into a bank now and there's a huge amount of slot machines, I call them, which I can't use anyway.
Exactly.
And maybe there's only one teller.
Yeah.
And one teller as such. And banking is changing by the minute, and it'll be a hole in the wall sooner or later. And when I was told about this about 20 years ago, 25 years ago, down in the Bank of Ireland, banking is gone, and it'll be a little thing on the wall, and you'll get your money there. I thought that fellow was gone mad.
Yeah, well, you see, I mean, if the plans do come to fruition, you will actually be living in a cashless society before too much longer. And
yeah, it'll be our plastic.
I know that's a discussion for a different day, Austin, because time is now with us on this occasion. But you'd wonder if we could maybe, if everybody was to stop for 5 or 6 minutes at some point in the day and just reflect back to the real 3 or 4 values that, as you say, your parents and your grandparents tried to instill in you, and live that day by those values, I just have a feeling, Austin, that we might just be living in a totally better and different society.
I think so, Donny. And apparently we'll have to come back to this conversation again, because apparently we've run out of time.
We can do this.
Hmm? But, hello, Donny.
Wouldn't be unusual when the two of us get chatting, Austin.
Yeah. And we will continue this on at some later stage, and maybe we'll get a group of people into the studio of like age as such, and we'll get a discussion going and see where will that go. And I'll just sit back and keep dodging the blows as such. And on that note, thank you very much, Donny, for coming on, and I'll see you later on.
My pleasure as always, Austin.
Bye.
God bless you, Austin. Bye-bye.